He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day to our listeners on this edition of Car Keys with Mike and Jay and Robin. And depending on what the temperature is outside when you're hearing this show, if it, you've had a cold morning and you haven't checked your tire pressures from the summer pressures you might have been running in them, I would advise strongly that you check them, as I had an indicator light come on in my Hyundai. And unfortunately, it doesn't tell you which tire is low, but it was indicating that the tire pressure was low. And so I decided to check all four and found all four tire pressures were 6 pounds lower than they should be at normal cold pressures when you start up a car in the morning. This is not to say you need to check the pressures every day, but if you have been running summer pressures at more or less the correct pressure and it is now in the winter time or fall or winter time pressure season when they're going to be likely to be pressures, temperatures under 30 degrees, you should check your tires, because when I checked my tires on the morning that we did this show, they were all at 26, not just one. I decided to check all of them because I couldn't tell which one was supposedly low on the indicator.
And where were they supposed to be?
34.
So, Robin,
that's actually 8 pounds below, and that's significant. It was significant in that it hadn't gone on. We've had a couple of mornings in the time this show was taped where it has been at freezing or below, and this was the first morning that the light came on to tell me that I should check something.
And that's because you haven't driven the car in a while, but you're right.
That is not true, and don't comment, Jay.
Anyways,
I advise all owners to check their pressures, only because while 26 probably isn't really a disastrous pressure to be running your tires at, it does indicate that they might wear differently, and they might. It just means that you should put more air in them, because no Pret tires that I know of should be running at under 30 or 32 pounds, no matter what the sticker on the door panel might say, which is where you usually can find what is the recommended tire pressure that your car tire should be running at in a normal day, year-round. This is cold. They're all going to warm up when you run the car for a while, and there's no reason to worry when they go up even as high as 38 or 40 pounds in some cases, above most standard cold start-out tire pressures on most cars that are running today. Now, Jay.
Actually, I have a couple comments on that. First of all, as we all know, on the more modern or newer car, virtually all new cars now have independent tire pressure monitoring, right? And so you can actually see what pressure you have in each of the tires. But even if you don't, and if the tire pressure light goes on, if you take a quick look around the car, you can see if the tires look normally inflated, and equally so, you can be sure that, or you can be rest somewhat assured that you don't have a leaking tire. And like Robin said, you know, go and get some air in your tires. Now, the question is, where do we go these days? I think, and I may be wrong, and Robin, you may correct me, that inflation in gas stations in Connecticut has to be free. The problem is not all the tire inflators pumps actually work in gas stations, nor are the gauges necessarily very reliable. So many of us just go to our local shops, and on morning like these, they all get bombarded by a bunch of people who show up to get their tire pressures checked. Which is fine, and they'll be happy to do it. And let's not forget to tip them a few bucks on the way out. Having said that, like in my Volkswagen, I have different tire pressure settings by default, because the car is made to has a pretty large towing capacity. The tire pressure in the rear tires is by default factory set at 39. Pounds, which is kind of on the high side, and I tend to run them lower and an equal 34, 35 on all corners. The problem with that is that when it does get cold and and they fall below 33, my warning light goes on, and I have to put air in the tires before the light goes off to turn off the warning light. But anyway, so different
okay.
stories.
I would like to jump in at this point about Connecticut being a state which says that you do not have to pay to have your tires inflated, even if you go to a station, and you can go to a station in Connecticut, and you will find that the air pump area may have a pay-as-you-go pay pump. But you must, therefore, or to avoid that, you just need to go in and talk to the clerk at the counter and ask them to turn on the air pump.
Correct.
And I have not, yes, Jay is correct. Sometimes they aren't working. They get a lot of use at these stations generally. And they do tend to need some kind of service to make them operate if they are not in operable condition. But you do not have to pay in Connecticut, but some stations have pay-as-you-go stations, so, areas, because they may have off switches that they turn off inside, but if you put a coin in, you could get and pay for air in off hours if the stations were not open in the nighttime or when you happen to stop in looking to check your tires and put air in them.
To be honest, I would rather pay a buck or two in the more sophisticated pumps. You can preset the tire pressure and
correct.
Then you just put the,
and that's,
the knob
that
along
is true.
And the tires will set at the predetermined pressure.
And that those presettable units can you can set them. Yes, you can put in the recommended poundage that your tires take, and then when they and you just let them pump air, and then they'll beep. They may beep, they may go off automatically, but that is a very nice way to know that you have put an adequate amount of air in your tire. Otherwise, a gauge in your glove compartment could be a very handy accessory to have on hand because, as Jay said earlier, often the pumps at stations may not be relatively accurate. But, you know, it's not a rocket science. You do not have to actually have it at the recommended poundage, but you should have it with adequate air in them. And in my opinion, 32 to 36 pounds per square inch, and well, whatever the is the recommended range in most of the cars that are on the road, if they're not hyper sports cars and or towing vehicles like Jay mentioned his car was.
All right, moving on.
Moving on, Jay.
Moving on.
Take it over.
Take it over? What's new in the industry? I'm reading that...
The industry has got evolutionary, you know, there's so much going on in the industry. There's so many changes coming. Nissan's got a new pickup truck design. You know, Car and Driver has a headline in one of its magazines, 25 cars worth waiting for, and we've talked about that in a previous station, in a previous show. I don't know whether they're worth waiting for or not. I haven't really read the article. But there's a constant evolution going on in the electric car industry. There's adjustments being made in planning by the manufacturers. There's also adjustments being made by the interest level that the public is having in cars and in electric cars, and it's actually going up. Jay, you may add something to this.
So, yeah, speaking of the electric world, and this is a car we don't see here in the U.S., but BYD, Chinese car manufacturer, and the name BYD stands for Build Your Dream, is the number one electric car manufacturer in the world. And as of last quarter, they outsold Tesla 2-1. So that's a big change
in China.
When you take into consideration that to this day Tesla still has about 50% market share in electric vehicles in our country. You have to wonder if or when electric Chinese electric cars make their way here, what is going to happen to the automotive landscape? And there's a few, you know, there's still a few surprises here. I mean, in my mind, the fact that Tesla still has 50% market share is just mind-boggling, considering the number of other offerings from Hyundai, from Mercedes, I mean, from all the manufacturers, basically, Ford, GM, all have very appealing electric propositions, and yet Tesla has 50% of the market, and yet BYD is outselling them 2-1 on
okay.
the global stage.
Let's talk about BYD briefly, because it is a Chinese manufacturer. It is very definitely a political football in this country, because as we know, or as many know, to manufacture cars in China is such an incredibly cheaper situation that the cars that they produce can undercut the costs of American-produced cars or European-produced cars by a considerable amount of money, in probably at the level in thousands. And they would be very dangerous if they were permitted into this country and they probably inevitably will be. But as an example, the head of Ford recently had a story in one of my auto mags, and he has had a Chinese vehicle. I can't remember what brand was or the model was, and he's been driving it around Detroit and around his offices. He got it imported in. It's not probably a legally usable car, registration-wise, for the normal American, but he's been able to drive one around. And the story was all about how impressed he was with that vehicle. The danger of that is that vehicle probably, if I can remember correctly, was on par with one of the Tesla models as far as what the features were, if they didn't have more features than the Teslas. But it was... I don't think they actually said what the value of the car was on retail, where it is sold, which would be in China and maybe parts of Europe. But it was considerably cheaper than what the equivalent Tesla model would have been. And it would be a disaster for the American manufacturers if they were let in here without what we have to call import tariffs, import fees, which would protect the American industry. That is sitting in the background of this American, of the EV world going forward, because China is on the bandwagon, Jay, as you mentioned, and they have got a very large numerically lineup of electric vehicles, which the quality apparently is getting better every month, if not every day or every year. And to match the quality of cars produced in Europe and America in the United States. So I don't know what's going to happen if they actually really make it into the market. They may already be in Canada. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure either. I don't think so, but I really don't know, actually.
But since Americans are used to buying cars based on the cost factor in many cases, because a lot of people can't afford certain cars priced over X number of $1,000s,
so
Chinese cars would be very inviting, probably, if they were let in without significant tariffs on top to have their prices raised to...
So let me branch off a little bit on that.
Okay.
Right now, the way, I guess, we're keeping them out and keeping non-American-produced cars or EVs or EV components... out of the country is by favoring U.S.-made components and to benefit from tax credits. So the $7,500 tax credit is only available to cars that incorporate...
Made with U.S. materials, right?
Yes.
North America.
Are produced here, or certain percentage of components produced here. And I don't know the details exactly, except that I do know that the lowest priced Tesla Model 3 was... discontinued for that particular reason. What these tax credits are also doing is affecting the resale price of EVs. So I was just reading an article where it was the price of EVs dropped significantly. Used EVs lost their values more than their ICE counterparts.
Right.
But the point being made was that people who buy these EVs factor in the real cost of the car, including the $7,500 or maybe more a few years ago, the $7,500 tax credit. So if you buy a $40,000 car and you got a $7,500 tax credit, you know, you basically are looking at a $32,500 car. And if you sell it after 2 or 3 years, yes, you're willing to discount it more or sell it at a lower price than if you really had paid 40. There's also the fact that there is a tax credit on used EVs, but it's limited to cars that are under $25,000, which is pushing the price of, or pulling down the price of used EVs in some way. So there are very affordable electric vehicles on the used car market right now. And this article seemed to say now is the time to take advantage of those lower prices on these used cars.
Well, I'll chime in, Jay, because I'm looking at maybe the article you looked at, but the article I'm looking at is in Automotive News, and it says used EVs could address the problem of affordability. And within that article, below the heading, it says used EVs were the biggest, first, best-kept secret out there for consumers. So said a person named John Posumato, CEO of EV, to rent-to-own company, Drive It Away. We know that it's certainly in the early stages of trying to get rid of an EV, the dealers could not really figure out what kind of trade-in to give in. If somebody wanted to trade in an early purchase of an early EV and might have paid over sticker back when they was a shortage of EVs and people were clamoring to get the first ones. This article seems to say that EVs are a really good buy for people who can't afford to pay whatever. The average price, I think, of a new car now is in the low 40s. It used to be in the 30s, and it keeps going up. I've always said to some people I talk to, go out and buy a used Prius. If you can't afford, you know, a car over $20,000, because you could probably find used Priuses, and these are the older versions. I don't know much about the new ones, and they probably have 50,000 to 75,000 miles on them because owners love them and keep them. But except for what I don't know is what is the general lifespan of an EV battery in these used vehicles, and I don't know whether they're sold with new batteries or not. But
so
they're still good buys. For people,
speaking
let's
of
say,
EVs,
who can't
so I do
pay
know somebody personally who has a Model S bought used for $20,000. I don't exactly know what year it is, but it has I think he bought it with 60,000 miles, and it has 120,000 miles. This person drives a lot, commutes a fair distance every day, and the battery has at 120,000 miles has only lost 1 or 2%. And he's like, you know, at this point, he really doesn't care because he's still getting, you know, 300-mile range or whatever. He still does his daily commute. He travels, I think, 100 miles each way every day and charges it at work on top of that. So
battery life is tending to be very good. I don't think they come, in at least the U.S. models, I don't think they come with warranties over 100,000 miles, but I think electric. I don't hear of many people having to change batteries in electric vehicles, Jane. I think you just have echoed that in your story, your personal ownership story that you know about.
Yep. So if you want to keep, and this is just an anecdote and jumping from one thing to another, I was just talking with somebody who has a Mazda CX-5 with 260,000 miles and has never done anything but basic maintenance to the car.
That's an ICE.
Correct.
Right.
Just small SUV. We're talking about cars that are, you know, they'll go on forever, quote unquote.
That is very true.
I don't know why I'm thinking about that. And I do want to talk about my driving experience last week. So
let's go to it.
So
this is a Porsche story for our listeners. So if you're a Porsche fan, listen to this story of Jay's because
and
it's
if you're
quite
not,
amusing
well,
and interesting.
That's you know too bad. But I'm a big fan of the Porsche 911, as you know, Robin. And I have an older model, which is actually the first water-cooled model, the first fully redesigned Porsche 911, and that car came out in 1998, and I have a 2001 model. So it's by no means a new car. But it drives like a fairly modern car, and it's fun to drive, and it's relatively quick. But this past week, I had a chance to drive a couple other 911s, more recent. And one was a 2015, what we'd call it, model 991. So it was a model produced between 2012 and 2018-19. And it was okay. It was the base model engine-wise, and I was actually a bit disappointed. But then I got to drive with what is the absolute track beast, 2024 GT3 RS. And this car is probably the fastest track car in production, or ever, for that matter. Unfortunately, I drove it on Florida roads, which are quite boring, and I was running errands and going to Best Buy and Staples, so not really an exciting drive, but the car has features that are just absolutely amazing. The number of driving modes and settings on the car is just limitless, really. Anyway, lots of fun, and still my favorite sports car.
And you might tell our listeners what it takes to own one of those cars in terms of finance, because Porsches are not cheap at any level, and this one is way up there.
So that car is way up there. I mean, we're talking, we're talking crazy amounts.
Six-figure.
We're talking triple six figures.
Right.
And up. But the reality is, if you're a Porsche 911 fan, you can do like me. There are models out there that are less desirable than others, and you can find some for quite affordable prices, even with high miles like mine. And there are a few in the areas. I spoke with one person at the grocery store this weekend who has a convertible, same generation as mine. I think his was a 2002. Beautiful car. And I'm sure that, it's as a third car an extra car.
A second car.
They are fun and really quite affordable. I guess until you really have to fix them and put money into them. But, we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Well, all Porsches are excellent drivers anyways. I'm sure that depending on what the money level is that you can afford, going up is necessarily going to get you one car more fun to drive than another in a Porsche, because they are all, I would say, excellent fun driving cars, and you don't have to really buy the top of the line to have a fun drive in a Porsche, right?
Well, true, but I was in Florida doing some work for a client, and this guy obviously has actually four or five Porsches and three 911s. And one has over 140,000 miles. It's his wife's daily driver, and she has no other car. And he has two, very special 911s, both of which have that he puts on 5,000 to 10,000 miles, or 5,000 miles a year on each one of them. I mean, this new 2024 has 6,000 miles, and so he uses these cars as daily drivers, and it can be done, and he's not afraid to do so. But obviously you have to be willing to take there's a depreciation. Actually, there's no depreciation. Those cars actually gain value. So he's doing okay.
Well, gentlemen, it looks like we're going to have to wrap this up again.
Really?
And I don't have a Porsche.
No, and I don't either.
Is it Porsche or Porsche? Which is right?
Oh, gosh. Go on
that's
YouTube.
That's a very good question to bring up and close our show on.
There are a bunch of YouTube tutorials on that. I'm not quite sure.
Not quite sure. Interchangeable, then.
Interchangeable, okay. Absolutely.
Until next week, we are Car Keys. Jay, sometimes Mike, and Robin.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.